This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Live Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of importance to Europeans and people of European descent wherever they live on the earth. Ladies and gentlemen, there has never been a more vital moment in history than the time we are now facing. Looking what we might call Armageddon in the teeth. Because the Jewish supremacists who dominate the American government, dominate much of the American media, certainly dominate and influence the President of the United States, George W. Bush, seem to be rushing headlong toward armed conflict and war with the nation of Iran. This conflict can only mean absolute, absolute disaster for the United States of America, for Europe, and indeed the entire world. Not just for the Iranian people, not just for the American people, not just for our soldiers who will be sent in as fodder in this conflict. Even if we simply bomb that country, we will unleash tens of millions of people who will be dedicated to getting back at America and harming America for attacking them when they have not attacked anyone else, including that of the United States of America. What is this conflict all about, ladies and gentlemen? It's about the fact that our leaders believe that Iran is pursuing a nuclear policy. That is, they want to achieve a nuclear weapon. It's understandable that they want to achieve a nuclear weapon. We have been taught very well, and every people have been taught very well, that you need nuclear weapons in this world if your opponents have nuclear weapons. Look what's happened in North Korea. North Korea, because they've had a nuclear weapon, was not invaded. North Korea is immune from invasion, yet they are a real threat to the world in terms of their maniacal leadership. Nuclear weapons are a deterrent as well as an aggressive weapon. And if Iran had nuclear weapons today, obviously they wouldn't have to worry about being invaded by another country trying to stop, quote, weapons of mass destruction. Now, if you ask me whether I think that it's good that Iran or India or Pakistan or Israel or any of these other nations have nuclear weapons, I would tell you immediately I think it's terrible. I think it's dangerous for the world on all counts. But ladies and gentlemen, this is a fact. Eventually, nuclear weapons will become more common, and other, even maybe more serious, more fierce weapons in the future, because you can be sure there'll be scientific breakthroughs in areas of weaponry, just as there are in techniques, in science, physics, and so many other aspects of life. There will be biological weapons of such a fierce quality that they could wipe out hundreds of millions of people in just a matter of days. Highly contagious viruses that would spread very rapidly from person to person. Nuclear weapons, the technology to create nuclear weapons, it was a very difficult scientific feat in the 1930s and 40s, in the development of the atomic bomb and the hydrogen bomb. But today, almost any graduate physics student can at least come up with a theory for the weaponry. The trick is, of course, to get the highly graded uranium or the enriched plutonium that you need to make such a weapon. Iran, having nuclear weapon reactors, which, by the way, is something that the same administration, the same governments of all the countries of the world have been pushing around the world, that we need more nuclear reactors for our meeting our energy needs rather than taking away the fossil fuels, the oil, natural gas, the coal, and so forth of the earth with the environmental damage that's taken place and also the shortage that will eventually come about on the earth because of it. But these processes can, in fact, enrich plutonium, enrich uranium, and in effect be able to make the material of nuclear weapons. Also, these kinds of enriched elements can be stolen. They can be bought. And, ladies and gentlemen, in the upcoming years, they will be more prevalent. The CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, and the President of the United States, and the American government policy in Russia has been very strongly in supporting the breakup of the Russian Federation. We worked very hard to break off Ukraine from the Russian Federation, and we continue to try to drive a wedge between Russia and Ukraine. We did the same thing in Georgia, and we're practically trying to foment a war right now between Georgia and Russia. In fact, I just got a call from a fine Georgian individual today who was discussing with me the efforts that the America and these other pro-Jewish supremacist parties, these globalists, are making in trying to cause conflict between Russia and Georgia. We have the CIA trying to foster all kinds of divisions from the former Soviet states that existed. And by the way, I have to remind you, because the media doesn't seem to want to remind us, Russia is not a communist state anymore. It is an anti-communist state. It is a state, in fact, which promotes openly the establishment and the policies and the values of the Christian religion. That's a fact, ladies and gentlemen. That's what Russia does today. They have gone back to their traditional roots. Now, I'm not saying every government official does this by any means, but you will see Vladimir Putin in the main Christian churches of Moscow on a regular basis. So what's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Our CIA, our government, the Jewish supremacists, of course, who are dominating our country and setting our policy, have tried to break off all these little rump states that have a lot of natural resources, by the way, and they have a lot of characters leading these states that are absolutely unstable. When these states are broken off, of course, we're also breaking off, in effect, the control over some of these facilities, bases, nuclear weapons, and the like. The Russians can try to deal with that, but it's very difficult. And many of the scientists in these particular so-called republics today, and by the way, they're little more than republics in many cases, because the Jewish supremacists, the people such as like the Khodorkovskys of the world and the Berezovskys of the world. And Berezovsky, by the way, has had a big role in the Chechenian revolt, believe it or not. This Jewish gangster who is responsible for so much murder, mayhem, destruction, and theft in the nation of Russia. And he's shielded, in fact, by governments around the world, including that of Spain and France and Britain, because, of course, he's got high-placed Jewish supremacists in position that can always go to his aid. This is true all over the world. You saw the media continually praising Khodorkovsky during his trial and making him out to be a hero. This man is a thief, a murderer, an extortionist. He stole literally more than $300 billion worth of natural resources from the Russian people with extortion, forgery, bribery, murder, and just outright theft. But he's portrayed as a hero. And he's portrayed, and when Putin and some of the Russians tried to crack down on this individual, It was simply said that, well, Putin's trying to crack down on civil liberty, and this is a danger to business. Well, it's not a danger to business. It's a danger to criminals, a danger to gangsters, what that was. And by the way, I don't agree with everything Putin does by any means. And I have many of my friends in Russia who are very strong patriots who are very angry at Putin about a lot of things and who don't support Putin and feel that he has not done enough. But I can tell you, compared to some of the other leaders of the world, he's done a great deal. So we've tried to work for these the breakup of the former Russian state, actually the Soviet state, it's now the Russian Federation. And of course, that offers many, many dangers for the world, nuclear-wise. We have a situation as well, of course, in Israel. We had a war. We've got a war still raging. I must say, sadly, that I saw the news today, and then more Americans died today in Iraq, and another 70 or so civilians got blown to hell, and hundreds injured. Boy, those people should really like America, huh? Look what we brought them. Look at the death and destruction we brought them. And, of course, it was all a lie. Saddam, you know, had no weapons of mass destruction. Saddam had not restarted a nuclear program. He was not an ally of al-Qaeda. In fact, he was probably an enemy because, in fact, he was an enemy. Saddam had a secular state, and al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and the rest of these people couldn't stand that. They want a religious state. Of course, there we go to our crazy Bushian Middle Eastern policy, the neocon policy that we have. How in the world are we going to support democracy in the Middle East and in the rest of the world when the truth is, if true democracy comes to these countries and people truly have leaders that represent their viewpoint, they will have leaders a lot stronger in opposition to Israel than they would under these autocratic states and fiefdoms that they have in these particular countries. That is the fact of the matter. The word on the street, the feeling on the street, is far more anti-Israel than it is, say, from the political offices of Jordan, from the political offices in Egypt, from the political offices in Saudi Arabia. Democracy comes in these countries, my God. If democracy, you know, we're supporting, by the way, a virtual dictator in Pakistan right now. And the truth is, if democracy comes in Pakistan, the people are overwhelmingly opposed to Israel. And the truth is, right now in Pakistan, the average Pakistani supports Osama bin Laden far more than they do the United States of America. That's a fact, and that's one reason why Osama bin Laden has not been apprehended, because he has so much support in the regions of Pakistan where he's very likely hiding out at this moment. So here's Israel. They pursue this incredible program of weapons of mass destruction. They steal nuclear material from the United States. They literally break every sort of rule. America, even though we supplied Israel most of its weapons and its guns and the money it needed to establish itself as a state and preserve itself, because even though America's been the primary force in the United Nations and elsewhere around the world on behalf of Israel, Israel specifically went against the will and the interest of the United States of America in pursuing the nuclear bomb. And of course, they've got the nuclear bomb. In fact, we believe they've got 200. They also have these submarines that can go all over the world today. Submarines that can threaten every major capital of the world. Boy, that's a dangerous thought, isn't it? And ladies and gentlemen, we found out recently that Britain even played a role in helping Israel get some of these nuclear weapons. But you see, it usually isn't Americans. It's usually Jewish supremacists, Jewish extremists, not all Jews, but Jewish extremists, those Jews who support Israel, those Jews who support the extremist agenda of Israel and the entire Talmudic racial supremacy that religion teaches. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, for saying this, but this is fact, not fantasy. Israel itself is a reflection of this supremacist vision, and I can tell you that Israel is a supremacist state without any question. And Israel does things every day that the same Jewish press in America will condemn if Americans do it or if any other country does it. The American press went ballistic in opposition to South Africa. But not only did private firms disinvest, the government of the United States disinvested. And the United States of America tried to force people to disinvest from South Africa. But Israel is, in fact, a segregated state. They have separate schools for Jews and separate schools for Arabs in Israel. They have separate whole towns and villages. On the very land they've stolen from the Palestinians can't even live in those cities, those villages, go to those schools. Total segregation. Total segregation. I tell you, no matter what you say about Jim Crow South and the existence of racial segregation in the American nation, there's always been blacks living in the same towns and the same cities, sometimes even next door. The city of New Orleans, I can remember that well. In Israel, it's not quite that way. You have very clear lines of demarcation and very little integration and an overriding, prevailing segregation and separation between new and Jew and non-Jew. And by the way, I must say that I remind you of this. The Jewish media in America is very quick to condemn anyone, any white person, or any black person for that matter, who would stand up and condemn intermarriage and would oppose the intermarriage between a white and a black person. And you know I'm telling you the truth. You can look at any New York Times, Wall Street Journal. You can see many, many movies about the subject. Any person that opposes such marriage is portrayed as a bigot and evil and the rest of it. And of course, the states that had laws against intermarriage, there were tremendous campaigns and efforts against them to get them to destroy and repeal and revoke those laws. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Israel right now has based on law the fact that a Jew cannot legally marry a non-Jew. And not only that, as I've said so many times, and I will repeat things again and again and again until people get it in their thick skulls, that there are Jews right now in Israel, like the Kohanim class, which is the traditional leadership of Jewry, the ancient priest class, which the Jewish people honor, the Kohanim literally cannot even marry another Jew, that is a practicing person of the Jewish religion, if that person has any trace whatsoever of Gentile blood. That's a fact. So not only can Jews not marry non-Jews in Israel, but Jews can't even marry Jews who have any trace of non-Jewish blood. That's the way it is. And I'm not talking about all Jews, but I'm talking about the Kohanim, which is the elite, kind of the SS, you might say, of Israel. So now here we go with Israel, with weapons of mass destruction, with biological weapons, with chemical weapons, one of the biggest supplies of these weapons in the world. I want to quote to you from something, if I can find it here. It's a pretty shocking little document. It's from an individual who was a member of the Mossad. And his name was Ostrovsky. And he left the Mossad. And he talks literally in his book about how Israel not only is developing biological and chemical weapons, but that Israel has actually tested these weapons on some of the Palestinians who come into the country for work and so forth. Now here's the quote. By the way, and Viktor Ostrovsky, so you know who he was. He was a former Mossad agent. He wrote two books about Israel's terror against their enemies. In one of them, he discusses the fate of Palestinians who illegally cross the border in search of work in Israel. Many thousands of these young men simply are never heard from again after being captured by Israel's forces. Some of them are taken to the ABC research facilities where they endure the indescribable horror of chemical, nuclear, or biological weapons testing. Here's a quote from Victor Ostrovsky, and I'll let you weigh this quote with your own sense of justice. ABC, standing for Atomic, Bacteriological, and Chemical. It was where our top epidemiological scientists were developing various doomsday machines should there be an all-out war in which this type of weapon be needed. There was no room for error. The Palestinian infiltrators came in handy in this regard. As human guinea pigs, they could make sure the weapons the scientists were developing worked properly and could verify how fast they worked and make them more efficient. You know, you've often read the stories and heard the stories of the testing on human beings in the concentration camps by the German National Socialists. We've all heard those stories, and we've seen the television programs and the documentaries and read the books and articles about this kind of thing. This kind of thing is being done right now in Israel. And it's not about determining how to save people from a disease. We're talking about determining how effective a biological or a chemical weapon is against an individual. And here's another article that I want to quote to you about the absolute ultimate supremacist terror weapon. My friends, the unholy marriage of Jewish supremacism and terrorism, and Israel, of course, was founded on terror. They terroristically attacked and murdered many thousands of Palestinians and drove them out. They used terror as a weapon to make the Palestinians flee their homes. But this marriage of the supremacism and terrorism is best symbolized by an entirely new kind of weapon under their development in the supremacist state of Israel. It's an ethnically targeted biological bomb. The Sunday Times in Great Britain reveal that Israel's been developing a terrifying new kind of biological weapon. And here it is. And by the way, this hit the airways about the same time that we were getting ready to go to war against Saddam Hussein for not allowing weapons inspectors in his country. This is from the Sunday Times. It's by Israel. It's by Yuzi Manami and Mary Colvin. Israel planning ethnic bomb of Saddam Kazan. Israel is working on a biological weapon that would harm Arabs but not Jews, according to Israeli military and Western intelligence sources. The weapon, targeting victims by ethnic origin, is seen as Israel's response to Iraq's threat of chemical and biological attacks. Yesterday, Saddam Hussein, the Iraqi leader, backed away from the brink of war and agreed to resume cooperation with the inspection team seeking his suspected chemical and biological weapons plants. And as a footnote here, I'm going to tell you, obviously, it turned out, with all the days of searching, they couldn't find anything. And, of course, you can't move huge tons of biological chemical weapons in a fortnight or even 20 minutes. These inspectors could go anywhere. That was one reason why I knew there were no weapons of mass destruction in that country. And most everybody did that had any brain. But of course, it wasn't a question of brains. It was a question simply that they had the power to control the President of the United States, and they had the power to promote this lie in the media. It goes on. Kofi Annan, the United Nations Secretary General, said he believed Iraq had met UN requirements. As Britain and America stood by to bomb Saddam, however, Tony Blair's office said compliance must be unconditional. The White House, which is threatening Iraq with the biggest onslaught since the Gulf War, said President Bill Clinton's advisors were assessing whether Iraq's offer was adequate. The Pentagon is ready to bomb within days. Of course, we know what happened. They did bomb. In developing their ethnobomb, Israeli scientists are trying to exploit medical advances by identifying distinctive genes carried by some Arabs, then create a genetically modified bacterium or virus. The intention is to use the ability of viruses and certain bacteria to alter the DNA inside their host's living cells. The scientists are trying to engineer deadly microorganisms that attack only those bearing the distinctive genes. The program is based at the Biological Institute at Nez Tzayana, the main research facility for Israel's clandestine arsenal of chemical and biological weapons. A scientist said The task was usually complicated because Arabs and Jews are of Semitic origin, but he added, they have, however, succeeded in pinpointing a particular characteristic in the genetic profile of certain Arab communities, particularly the Iraqi people. The disease could be spread by spraying the organisms into the air or putting them in water supplies. The idea of a Jewish state conducting such research has already provoked outrage in some quarters because of parallels with the genetic experiments of Dr. Joseph Mengele, Nazi scientist at Auschwitz. Dedi Zucker, a member of Knesset, the Israeli parliament, denounced the research yesterday, morally based on our history and our tradition, our experience, such a weapon is monstrous and should be defeated. William Cohen, the American Defense Secretary, revealed that he had received reports of countries working to recreate a, quote, certain types of pathogens that would be ethnic specific. A senior Western intelligence source confirmed last week that Israel was one of the countries Cohen had in mind. The ethnobomb claims have been given further credence in Foreign Report, a Jane's publication that closely monitors security and defense matters. It reports unnamed South African sources are saying Israeli scientists have used some of the South African research in trying to develop an ethnic bullet against Arabs. It also says Israelis discovered aspects of the Arab genetic makeup by researching on Jews of Arab origin, especially Iraqis. Additional reporting came from Matthew Campbell in Washington and Hugh McManus. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, how, you know, talk about terror and talk about racism and talk about ethnic cleansing and talk about ethnic murder and talk about, you know, the worst nightmares anyone could have in the world coming true. And this is the kind of thing that Israel does. And we are not one bit concerned about getting the atomic bombs out of Israel, and not one bit concerned about getting the biological and chemical weapons out of Israel. Israel has violated about 200 United Nations resolutions. Well, we did not threaten Israel with going to war against Israel like we did to Iraq. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we're lined up to go to war against Iran. Against Iran, ladies and gentlemen, a country that has not attacked Israel. Has not attacked Israel. And in fact, they've got, you know, once the Iranian president said that Israel, that God wants Israel to be wiped off the map. He didn't say he was going to wipe off Israel off the map, but he was speaking prophetically the same way a lot of Christian evangelicals, because every Christian evangelical believes that eventually Israel will be wiped off the face of the earth in Armageddon. I mean, that's the fact of the matter. Even George Bush, if he is really an evangelical, believes that. Even, in fact, I was pretty shocked, Falwell said, and he's made a public statement which brought a lot of criticism from the Jews, by the way, that the Antichrist, he said, is already born. He's been born in Israel. He's a Jew, and he's going to, you know, rise to power from Israel. Now, of course, the belief is of the evangelicals that the Antichrist will come forward and he will rule for 7 years and he will kill hundreds of millions of people, including hundreds of millions of Christians, ladies and gentlemen. So I don't quite understand Falwell's belief about the Antichrist coming from Israel, and then he says, let's support Israel. Does that make any sense? Do you think? And I hear that all the time with evangelicals. They'll say, well, we got to support Israel because it's part of the prophecy, and when the Antichrist comes, then Jesus won't be far behind. Well, you know, is this the way you're supposed to fulfill, quote, prophecy, is by supporting evil, by doing something which will aid the Antichrist? Obviously, if Israel was not a viable state, and about Israel being wiped off the map, it's not about wiping it out or killing everybody in Israel. It's about the political entity called Israel, something which was created artificially, as you know, through massive immigration and through mass cleansing, ethnic cleansing and murder and terrorism and torture and all the rest of it in 1947, 48, 49. That's where Israel came from, ladies and gentlemen. And when some people say wiped off the map, they're not saying wipe the people off, but they're saying that if the Jewish people there want to live in a state that respects the heritage and the rights of the other people, that's one thing. But Israel living in a state that literally suppresses, tortures, kills, drives out the native Palestinian people who've lived there for centuries, that's quite another matter indeed. So now we're lined up, ladies and gentlemen, ready to go to war perhaps against Iran. And what would that war cost, ladies and gentlemen? Well, the Iraq war is already going to cost the American people trillions, and I said it right, trillions of dollars. That's a fact. George Bush has been the most radical spender, destroyer of the American economy and American wealth and what our people have saved for generations. He has been the author of the biggest single deficit ever in the history of the United States of America. And in fact, this last month we had the highest single government overspending or deficit for the month that we've ever had in American history. George Bush has literally gone crazy. He knows his power ratings now are sinking down to about 35-36%, one of the lowest presidential approval ratings in American history. And I believe the man's getting desperate, and he believes the only thing that can bring him up is what also brought him up, and from the Iraq war, initially anyway, is another war. Because we go to war and Americans are put in harm's way, obviously, and then people rally around the flag and they rally around the commander-in-chief, etc., etc. And the worse things are, and the harder things are, and the more difficult things are, the more people feel a duty to rally around the president. And that's normal and natural. And that does happen in society. But I'm afraid that these people, and when people ask me whether there's going to be a war with Iran, I always thought about it, and I thought that, well, no, these Jewish supremacists can't be that crazy. They can't be that stupid, because this war could unravel everything that they're doing. And it could also unravel us, by the way, because it will give them this country, with the size of our government the way it is today, and all the police agencies and the FBI agencies and the police agencies of our country dealing with primarily a lot of the non-European elements that have come in and increased our crime, by the way. That's why we have so many police jails and enforcement agencies, and the clogged courts is because of the demographic change in the United States of America. That's a fact. That's a reality. And the same reality is going on in France today. The same reality is going on in Britain today. The same reality is going on in Canada today and many other countries around the world. But with these increased, law enforcement agencies, what happens when the entire economic underpinning of our society is pulled out from under us? Iran is the second biggest producer of oil in all of the OPEC nations. If we go to war against Iran, it will cause a disruption of our oil supplies. And in addition to the already incredible damage happening in Iraq, which, and by the way, this will embolden the resistance in Iraq tremendously, and Iran will start infiltrating at this point. If we even just send one bomb, electric generating nuclear reactors, if we just drop one bomb, they will start flooding in thousands of zappers and suicide bombers. They've already got, I think, about 250,000 people signed up to go into suicide missions against any nation or any entities that attack their country. And this is not like Saddam Hussein. These people are religious. The government of Iran is a popularly elected government. Again, democracy at work again. I thought this is what George Bush was for. Well, let me tell you, when the rest of the Mideast goes, democratic, I guarantee you George Bush is going to have his hands full. But what happens, ladies and gentlemen, we attack Iran. The infiltration along the huge Iran-Iraq border will increase dramatically. You will have a cutoff of oil supplies and panic. You will have increased terrorism all over the world. There are millions and millions of Americans who are teachers, who are businessmen, who are students, who are workers, who are employees of American firms and foreign firms all over the world. There's no way our government can protect them. It'll be open season on Americans across the world. The cutoff of oil could very well drive oil prices beyond $100 a barrel, perhaps $150, $200 a barrel. That's not out of the question. And what happens, ladies and gentlemen, when oil reaches that price? Well, plane tickets, because of the price of fuel, go up 4 or 5 times what they are now. What do you think that will do to the airline industry? What do you think that will do to all transportation? What do you think it does to every business relying on all the package delivery and the post office delivery and having to ship their products across the United States with gas and oil and all the rest of the other methods of transportation? What do you think that will do to the companies that have a fleet of cars or trucks? And then suddenly they're paying 5 or 6 times more in fuel. And these companies that were just barely making it are now beginning to go bankrupt at ever-increasing numbers. And many companies who had many employees are having to cut back on their employees, and they, in turn, bring less money and productivity into the American economic system. So what happens, ladies and gentlemen? The truth is, and a lot of economies are even more fragile than ours, and I think ours is very fragile, but the truth is, if this occurs, we could truly have not only a Great Depression in the United States of America, but a Great Depression around the world. And this depression coming will not be like the Depression of the 1930s, where America was still such a fundamentally moral and Christian country, and a European-American country, where people had hard times, they stuck together. It'd be more like an America like what you saw in New Orleans in the wake of Katrina, as the authorities became overwhelmed. When the times get hard, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to see something that's wild in the streets. You'll see more repressions. And, of course, there's no possible way we could ever invade Iran successfully. I mean, we could do it, but it would take millions of Americans. The death toll would not be in the thousands as it is in Iraq, and 20,000 or 30,000 wounded, which is high enough. It'd probably be more like 200,000 or 300,000 wounded. The cost would be enormous, and these people will resist this every step of the way. And not only that, if we just bomb them, I guarantee you they will unleash what they feel like they've got to do in retaliation. They don't have any bombers that can reach the United States of America. But they do have suicide bombers who, unfortunately and terribly, will reach so many Americans who are in the Middle East, in Europe, elsewhere around the world, and they will be able to get to them. Ladies and gentlemen, this will be a tragic time for the United States of America unless we step back from the brink of war. This is one of the most dangerous periods I've ever lived through in my life, and I've lived through a number of different exciting periods in American history. I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis as a very young child, and I remember going under the desks when the nuclear drills got going, and I remember worried about nuclear war and praying with my family that we wouldn't have nuclear war. And years later, we found out that we came much closer to war than any of us had even suspected at that time, and all of us were gravely worried during that time. I remember my father. We even made provisions to build a fallout shelter, you know, and the prospect of nuclear war was alive with each of us. We lived it, you know. We studied the dealing with it in school. Our families put aside food and water and buried them, and thinking about putting extra insulation in the attics, extra coverage to stop the radiation from coming down if a nuclear conflict started. But this prospect of war with Iran is absolutely incredible, ladies and gentlemen, absolutely incredible. And we need to back off from this. And there is one way that we could stop this conflict, absolutely one way we could do it. And I know a way that the Iranians would agree to it quickly, and we could do a lot for peace in the Middle East. And as I quoted earlier, the American government and the British government, Jack Straw, recently said that we want to make sure Iran doesn't get nuclear weapons, and then as soon as they don't, we're going to make sure Israel gets rid of theirs. What we should do, ladies and gentlemen, is put pressure on the state of Israel and get Israel to agree to complete inspections for chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons, and to remove all nuclear weapons. And if Israel would agree to do that, I'm absolutely certain that Iran would agree to full inspections and no enrichment of uranium or plutonium on their soil and their land. But are we going to do this? No. I think that I really believe now that we are moving toward war. that these people, as I said earlier, I thought they were too smart for this, but the truth is, I think they're just plain insane. And the history of these Jewish extremists all over the years has simply been repeatedly that they've always gone too far, and they don't know when to stop. And I think the statements that the Iranian president said about the myth of the Holocaust, and he talked about the prophecies of Israel being wiped off the map, is just too much for them. And I think that once someone starts to attack some of their pet beliefs and some of their pet ideas, which they give to the world, like different aspects, you know, the Holocaust story as they give it, I think these people are incensed. I think these Jewish extremists will now stop at nothing. And I tell you now, I do predict military action in Iran. And I think it will be one of the greatest tragedies in the history of Europe, in the history of the Middle East, in the history of the world. I think it will have dire effect upon all of the American people, Canadian people, the European people. And this kind of an oil crisis that will come for it, and the economic disaster that will come out of this, will certainly fall even harder on Europe and America in terms of the European American nations than it will, in fact, in the third world, because they, in most of the countries of the third world, they still live by subsistence farming, and this kind of policy is not going to change that much. But in America and in Europe, it's not the same. It's going to be disastrous for our people there. The only nations that can benefit somewhat from this conflict are nations that deal somewhat in oil. But I think that when the economies collapse, even the demand for oil will be much lower, and their revenues also will shrink in light of that. But in the short term, probably Russia and some of these other countries will get a lot of money because of their tremendous natural resources that they possess in their own nations. But I think in the long term, again, we're facing crisis on an economic scale that's unprecedented, and I think that social unrest will come forward, and I believe these people are going to be absolutely insane and continue to pursue this policy in total disregard for the safety and the well-being of both the Iranian people, the Jewish people of Israel, the American people, the European people, the people of the world. Jewish supremacism, extremist Judaism, extremist Israel must be stopped. We should now demand that Israel sit down with the United Nations Commission, agree to nuclear inspections, and to completely remove all chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons in exchange for Iran agreeing to both inspections and not enriching or having any enrichment of uranium on their territory. This has been David Duke, and I hope you've enjoyed the show today. We've talked about a lot of different things, many things that I don't usually speak about. Remember, you have before you the power of the Internet. You have the power to reach tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people with a few presses of your fingertips. You've got that opportunity. Go do it. When you get off this program, help spread the word, reach new people, and when we have a consensus, of the great consensus of the European American people, we will, in fact, rise up. We will stand in the street. We'll be like those people in Eastern Europe who overthrew the tyrants and dictators of old communism, and we will stand up ourselves here in our own countries and remove our tyrants, those who control our press and our media, those who befoul our morality, our values with Hollywood, those who take the American dream and twist it into a nightmare rather than the sound and the beautiful values of our founding fathers. Thanks so much, and I will certainly see you tomorrow. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddude.com.